It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
All right, we are one day after the elections now. The big sweeping changes that were expected have happened leads me to a question. Do you believe that there is a specific divine purpose for America? Do you believe that God raised up America for a special divine purpose? I know theoretically every nation could have a divine purpose, or every human being have a divine purpose, but you know, some of the origins of America, some of the stories of God being with America, some Christian foundations of America, despite our checkered history, lead many to believe that there is a divine purpose, that America is a unique nation, that America, out of all the nations in the world, out of the great powers of the world, is standing firmly with Israel, that America, in the midst of its corruption and sin, has done so much to send out missionaries around the world, that there are many who believe there is a divine purpose. God has raised up America for such a time as this. And therefore, when they pray for our country, when they labor in the elections, when they seek to do what's right, they feel it's a larger consequence. In other words, if Russia rises or falls, it affects tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people. That's true. However, it does not necessarily have Rome rose and fell, okay? Other nations rose and fell. The Babylonians and the Assyrians and these other nations, the Philistines and so on, they rose and fell. They came and went. A lot of the world today, the Middle East, countries like United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia, these did not exist as distinct countries in centuries past. So countries can come and go. Is there a specific divine purpose? Do you believe it? Do you believe that God has raised up America in a unique way for last day's purposes, for eternal purposes? Or do you think that, no, to look at it like that is what messes us up? To look at it like that is what makes us begin to think that, well, you know, we've got to take over. We've got to make this a Christian country and establish some type of theocracy or whatever it is. So that's my question. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or you can get involved in the discussion on Facebook at Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. What I also want to share with you today, I have some pointers for our newly elected officials, especially those who are newer to politics. I have some pointers for them. And also, I want to talk to you about where evangelical Christians often make a big mistake during seasons like this, okay? This is a massive shift, the likes of which we have not seen in most of our lifetimes, unless you're alive in the late 30s. We've not seen a shift like this, an electoral shift like this in our nation's history for a couple of generations, really, for decades and decades and decades, and in our entire history. It's very rare to have a shift like this. So we haven't been through this exact thing, but we've been through similar things, or at least on a minor level. And I want to talk to you as the show goes on today about some of the things that we get wrong at times like this. But let me start here and read a letter that I've written to newly elected officials, and I'm calling it Politics as Unusual. So if you happen to be listening, I know it's not particularly likely that you're just elected to Congress, elected to Congress today, and you're listening, but if you are, I've got some wisdom for you. Congratulations, you've just been elected to one of the houses of Congress as one of the new conservative voices, and we're expecting you to be an agent of change, hopefully positive change. Still, it must be a little uncomfortable to introduce yourself with a term that is widely perceived to be pejorative, negative, as in, hello, I'm so-and-so, and I'm a politician. I mean, come on, how would you like to introduce yourself? Just talking to everybody now and say, I'm a politician. What do you do for a living? I'm a politician. Well, that's kind of a mixed meaning there. So surely there'd be no shame in saying I'm a professor or a dentist or a computer programmer or a football coach or a street vendor or a receptionist or a hairstylist or a truck driver or a stay-at-home mom or a full-time student. But to say I'm a politician carries more negative overtones than positive, which brings me to my point. You don't have to be a politician or fall into the politics-as-usual syndrome. In fact, to make it easy for you in the midst of the intensity of your new schedule, see, I'm making this user-friendly for you there in D.C., here are four simple principles to follow if you want to make a real impact for good. If you are an elected official, this applies to you as well. By the way, if you are a spiritual leader and tend to be more of the politician, tend to be more of one that's going to kind of survey where the trends are and where the people are at, as opposed to surveying God's heart and God's mind, and therefore knowing what to bring to the people. If you're going to be more of a professional that you're paid to do a job, as opposed to a spiritual leader who's serving God and not money, then these principles would be good for you as well. But let me give you four simple principles to follow if you really want to make an impact for good. And I'm speaking again in particular to our newly elected officials. So this is for you. Are you ready? Pen in hand. Come on. Got to write this down. Number one, never compromise a core conviction. Never compromise a core conviction. From your first days in Congress or ministry, you'll be reminded that change comes gradually and incrementally, that there are rules you must play by, that there are procedures and protocols. And some of this is true. There are times when you'll have to negotiate. There are times when you'll have to postpone or modify a strategy. There are times when you will have to choose between the lesser of two evils. But you must never move away from your core convictions, your life-governing principles, your moral and ethical foundations, regardless of cost or consequence. Let me amplify that for a minute. Many of our elected officials, now that they're in, will be told, this is how you play the game. Okay, I know you came in here starry-eyed and thinking you're going to change the whole world, but it doesn't work like that. In fact, you have to jump through these hoops. In fact, there are ways you have to do things. In fact, you're going to have to give and take a little. Now, some of that is true. In other words, there is a system in place. Certain people have seniority. Certain things take time to work your way through, to get on certain committees that have a certain level of influence or impact. But the moment you compromise a core conviction, and friends, it's the same in the business world, it's the same in ministry, it's the same in personal life. We will never move ahead with God's purposes. We will never move ahead with what is really important. We will never move ahead with righteousness, with morality, with ethics, when we have to compromise a core principle to do it. Now, if our core principle is wrong, we have to reevaluate our whole lives. But there are things, there are hills that you have to die on. You have to determine, I can't move from this. And the temptation is, but look for the greater good. No. You have to just do it little by little. So move away from that. I know, Pastor, you have these deep-seated views, but look, I'm telling you, as the wealthiest man in your church, supporting your ministry single-handedly, that I cannot support this, and the people won't hear it, and you're just going to have to modify your conviction. Well, if it's a peripheral side issue, then you have to ask yourself, is this worth dying for? Is this worth taking a stand and losing everything for this stand? Is this one of these immovable truths for me? Or is this something like, it's a preference? I don't have to wear a blue shirt. I can wear a white shirt. I don't have to wear a red tie. I can wear a dark. I can come in jeans. I can come in a suit. That's secondary. That's immaterial. However, when it comes to a core conviction, if you compromise that, you compromise your soul. You compromise who you are, and you will never advance God's purposes with that mentality. And there's tremendous pressure on elected officials. Once you come in, don't be so dogmatic and inflexible. Don't be so judgmental of your colleagues by holding to such black and white views yourself. No. Moderate. And when moderate means compromise a core conviction, you are already defeated. So my first word of counsel to our newly elected officials, especially those that have come in on conservative principles and have been backed by us conservative voters, we're expecting you to be an agent of change, but the only way you're going to do that is if you refuse to compromise your core convictions. So I've got three more words of advice for you, but those who are listening, who have ears to hear, understand that this is not just for politicians. This is for every one of us as children of God, especially those of us who are leaders. All right, my question, do you believe there is a special, unusual divine purpose for America? Has God raised up America in a distinct way? Maybe we're not written about in the Bible, but are we raised up in a distinct way to have a specific mission in this age and to the end of this age? Have we been raised up by God, or are we just like anybody else? I mean, we're no different in that respect from Mexico or Canada or Nigeria or Saudi Arabia. Every nation important to God, but none with specific divine purposes. 866-34-TRUTH. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire today. Michael Brown, truly blessed to be with you on this day after the elections, seismic shift in American politics. What does it mean? The bigger question is there a divine purpose for America, a unique divine purpose? Did God raise us up? Did God cause this land to be, quote, discovered by Europeans, that is, for a divine purpose? Has he marked America to be a light to the nations? Has he marked America to stand with Israel? Has he marked America to be a world military force for righteousness or for good or to protect other nations? Or is this just kind of our good luck or good fortune? Or God has purposes for every nation, and to the extent that nation follows him, it falls into his purposes. What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In the midst of this discussion, I'm going to start reading some of your comments on this. I am sharing principles for newly elected officials, especially newly elected conservative officials, some principles that will help them govern effectively. And I'm calling this Politics as Unusual. And we'll print this and put it online for you. We'll post it for you. So the first principle that I gave was this: never compromise a core conviction. Second principle, this is to our newly elected officials. Second principle, don't try to save your political career. Do what is right. Don't try to save your political career. Do what is right. No one voted for you with the possible exception of your family and close friends so that you could have a career in Washington. You were elected because of promises you made, because of stands you took, because people trusted that you would represent them faithfully. That's why you're in Congress. The subtle temptation is this: I can't get everything done in one term, which means I'll need to be reelected. And to be reelected, I'm going to have to become a savvy politician and to moderate my stands. And so the cycle of mediocrity and even mendacity, falsehood, continues. At what price to our country? At what price to your own soul? Again, this is the same principle that Jesus laid out: if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for my sake and the gospel, you find it. So much of our mentality is self-preservation, and therefore, I will do what is expedient rather than do what is right. I will take certain action in certain ways so that I can keep my career as a pastor or keep my career in this way or that way, rather than saying, okay, what's right? What's the vision that God gave me? What are the things I'm called to do to be an influence for good? And in the political sense, what are the promises that I made? Why was I elected? And do I stand for those? If so, then that has to be the issue. Governing according to that, not, well, if I take this stand or cast this vote, I won't be reelected. No, cast the vote because it's what you stand for and it's why you were elected. Or don't cast the vote for those reasons. Okay, principle number three. Don't lose your starry-eyed optimism. Again, this is a principle for a newly elected official, but this is also for every believer listening to me and for everyone who senses a calling of God to make a difference. Number three, don't lose your starry-eyed optimism. 4 days before his death at age 88 in 1791, John Wesley sent a letter to William Wilberforce, the anti-slavery reformer, then 31 years old. When Wesley warned him that unless God had raised him up for this difficult and daunting task, quote, in opposing that execrable villainy, which is the scandal of religion, of England, and of human nature, you will be worn out by the opposition of men and devils. But if God be for you, who can be against you? Are all of them together stronger than God? Oh, be not weary in well-doing. Go on, in the name of God, and in the power of his might, till even the American slavery, the vilest that ever saw the sun, shall vanish away before it, and vanish away it did. Question is, are there any Wilberforces among us today? Yeah, there are a lot of things we want to see changed. How about turning to the fear of God in the church and in much of our nation? How about the abolition of abortion on demand? How about justice for the oppressed? How about deliverance of people from sex trafficking? How about a massive turning away from drugs and drinking and promiscuity? How about a renouncing of materialism? How about turning the tide of gay activism? And on, and on, and on. How about that? Question is it possible? In the natural, it's completely impossible. All those things, any one of those things, let alone all of them together, in the natural are completely and entirely impossible. But with God, all things are possible. Maybe you're elected to Congress and you've got some dream about bringing reform or doing things right or seeing change. Hey, if God is with you, it can happen. It can happen. All right, what about the question of America being specially called by God? The question I asked at the outset of the broadcast. Let me read some of the responses. Okay, yes, but I believe all nations have a special divine purpose call upon them. We're not special in a way that other countries are not. Terry said, not necessarily. We don't necessarily have, a special divine purpose, different than other nations. But to the degree to which we bless the Jewish people and proclaim the gospel, we will be blessed of God. And the degree to which we curse Israel and hinder the gospel will be judged by God. Daniel says, not really. There'd be more Bible prophecy about them. Sort of like Ezekiel tells us that Muslim nations were created in order to be destroyed by God's wrath in the last days, end of times. Okay, if that's exactly how we read Ezekiel. Rose said, I do. America didn't even exist until a little over 200 years ago, and it became the most powerful free nation in the world. There had to be a purpose for that. Do you agree with that? I mean, listen to that statement. America didn't even exist until a little over 200 years ago, in terms of as a distinct nation, and it became the most powerful free nation in the world. There had to be a purpose for that. Do you agree or disagree? Do you see the clear hand of God on America? Do you clearly see that if you took America out of the equation, the world would look very different? Or do you just say, well, that's simply because we did things rightly to an extent and we're blessed by God and that's why we had the influence, or the influence we had has not been all for that good? What do you think? Rose continues, I also think that America has sent that many missionaries into the world to share the gospel, has given a lot of aid to disasters, the poor, etc. I also think that America has lost her first love and will be judged severely for that. Let's see. Jason says, I do. Suggested reading to spur thought would be Perry Stone's book, Plucking the Eagle's Wings. In it, he documents the Hebraic link between the history of ancient Israel and the patterns of the United States of America. It's really quite an astonishing pattern. You know, I'm not specifically familiar with that book, so I'll have to check on that before I can weigh in positively or negatively. Let's see. Cliff, I believe America has played an important role in spreading God's word as well as religious freedom around the globe. So I would have to say that there is and has always been a special divine purpose for America. Ryan, I don't know. I do know that God has a huge heart for the people in America. I know that God has reconciled the entire world to himself. I believe that the wrath of God has been satisfied in the cross and he waits with great kindness that leads us to repentance. Joanne, the purpose is like any other nation, is to fulfill the Great Commission. Each individual has to be obedient to what God has called him, her to do. Saying that I think America needs to think about the welfare of the Native American population, and goes on. Sandy, I do believe there's a special divine purpose. America was founded to be the shining city on a hill. I mean, many of the founding fathers of our nation believe that. America was founded to be the shining city on a hill. Christopher Columbus was Jewish until the Inquisition forced him to become Christian, if I have my facts straight, and he felt the call from God to sail for new lands. Okay, another little interesting tidbit for discussion there. What do you think? Divine purpose for America or not? And some fascinating math when we come back. got a question for you. Michael Brown here. Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, the website askdrbrown.org. By the way, my debate with Rabbi Shmuley from Monday night should be available in full to view online later today. How do you find out? Just go to the website, askdrbrown.org. You'll see a link on the homepage, and you'll click, and it'll tell you what to do. Either say it's about to be up, or it is up and running. And I encourage you to watch that. Watch it often. You'll learn from it. Encourage your friends to watch and tune in. Okay. My question. I've been asking and reading a lot of responses to this question. Do you believe that there is a special divine purpose for America? Do you believe God raised us up? I mean, here we have the seismic shift in the elections, and everyone's talking about the implications, Republican, Democrat, and the balance of power and all. I'm not talking about that today. I'm sure that's been talked up and will be talked up on many other shows through this week. My question is, what's God doing in the midst of it? Is there a divine purpose that God's jealous for, a specific, unique reason that he raised up America to be a city set on a hill, to be a light to nations? And as we go, much of the world will go because of the purposes of God. Come on, let's face it. If Paraguay rises or falls, it will affect many people, but it would not have the impact of America going up or down. If Malawi rose or falls, well, that would impact people, but it would not have the impact that America would. Is that by divine purpose? So my more specific question, a sub-question, do you believe America is mentioned in prophecy in the Bible? And I'll give you my answer. Yeah, I'll give you my answer at the end of the show, all right? I want to hear from you. What do you think? Is America mentioned in prophecy in the Bible? Do you personally believe that America is mentioned specifically in prophecies in the Bible? That these verses, certain verses, passages, while it may not say America by name, is clearly speaking of America. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, I promised to share some special math with you. I'll do that in a minute. But I've been reading through this show a letter that I wrote called Politics is Unusual, Some Principles for Our Newly Elected Officials. So this is something that I wrote just into the air. I mean, I'm not sending this to individuals right now. I might. But it is to our newly elected officials, in particular newly elected conservative officials. And I've been giving them principles. If you want to govern effectively to bring about lasting good and not just be another, quote, politician in the negative sense of the word, here are four principles for you. So the first, never compromise a core conviction. The second, don't try to save your political career. Do what is right. The third, don't lose your starry-eyed optimism. And the fourth and last, never forget that history is watching. Never forget that history is watching. When you look back over the annals of history, whom do you admire? Who stands out to you? The compromisers or the courageous, the faint-hearted or the fearless? When opposition arose to the nonviolent strategies of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because of the violent reprisals his followers were facing, he addressed those concerns at a church meeting in Selma, Alabama, March 8, 1965. His words still shout out to us today. Quote, a man dies when he refuses to stand up for what is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true. So I'm urging our newly elected congressmen and women, those already elected that may have gotten into bad patterns and habits, as well as everyone that is a leader in the body, I'm urging you, stand up for justice, for truth, for what is right. You might be ridiculed today, but you will be revered tomorrow. So what will it be? More of the same old shelf-worn, musty stuff, or a breath of fresh air, a break with ineffectual tradition, a new breed of politician, and a new type of politics, politics as unusual. Here's hoping that you'll make us proud, to paraphrase the ancient Jewish sage Hillel, if not you, then who? And if not now, then when? In a moment, I want to transition to another relevant discussion about the elections, namely, some of the mistakes that we as evangelicals tend to make when we have a major shift and candidates who are more conservative come into power. Now, we haven't had a shift like this in our lifetimes unless you were alive in the late 30s when we had this massive shift. And again, on this level. It's almost, not quite, but almost unprecedented in our national history. But we've had things that were close, or we've had things that resembled this, at least, in most of our lifetimes. And I see a consistent pattern of error that we make. So I want to talk about that in a moment. But first, here's some interesting math that Marcus, the editor of our Voice of Revolution online magazine, sent to me. When I debated Rabbi Shmuley, he argued that evangelicals were marginalizing themselves through an obsession with homosexuality. And whether evangelicals are marginalizing themselves or not is another question. I may even get to it before this week is out to talk about, especially in light of the elections. Shmuley wrote an editorial, came out in the Washington Post, and so on the Huffington Post, maybe some other places as well, claiming that we have done just that, marginalized ourselves through an obsession with homosexuality, and then sadly put me in that class of going to the point of no return with stances that I'm taking, which he said concerned him as a friend. Of course, I'm in friendly dialogue with Shmuley about that and have an editorial that I've written to respond to that and to what I believe is set the record straight about what we debated and about the major issues before us. But what of this charge that evangelicals are obsessed with homosexuality? Well, I mentioned yesterday that at the debate, attended by several hundred people, mainly the great bulk evangelical Christians, I asked them how many of them in their church in the last year heard a sermon dealing with marriage, the importance of marital relationships. Every hand went up. Basically every hand went up. Then I asked the question about if they heard a sermon focusing on child rearing, the importance of spending quality time with kids, how they raise their kids, etc. Virtually every hand went up. Then I asked them, what about either a regular church sermon or a men's meeting or women's meeting, heard a message about the dangers of sexual sin and pornography and so on, and just about every hand went up. Then I said, okay, how many of you have heard a sermon on dealing with gay activism from your church in the last year? No hands went up. There's no obsession with it, but here's what happens. When one person talks about it, it gets blasted around the country as if it's the biggest thing, or when we take an issue when there's a same-sex marriage ballot in our state and we take a stand over it, that gets magnified as if that's the main thing we think about. So Marcus did some math here. Evangelical sermons, editorials, speeches, books, articles, rallies, etc., dealing with calls for family improvement, sexual purity, anti-divorce, etc. He has listed at 1 billion. 1 billion sermons, articles, events, etc., times 0.00000001% of times media covers it because they don't care equals 10 times you hear about it in a year. So you're out there, your Rabbi Shmuley or someone else, like, I'm not hearing about this at all. Yeah, why? Because it's happening day and night, but the media is not reporting about it because they don't care. Evangelical sermons, editorial speeches, books, articles, rallies, dealing with gay activism, homosexuality, times 100, say that's 100, sermons, articles, events, etc., times 1,000% of times media covers it because it's incredibly controversial, equals 1,000 times he hears about it in a year. So you end up with 1,000 equals 10 times 100. Therefore, evangelicals talk about homosexuality 100 times more than they talk about family, sexual purity, divorce, etc. Not. We'll be back. Mulling over one more question relative to the elections. It's a bit more controversial, and I'm going to save it for tomorrow. I'm going to save it for tomorrow. Trust me, it's the better part of wisdom. It's going to open up a hornet's nest of other controversies, so I'm going to save it for tomorrow. And unless something earth-shattering happens that changes our direction, I will get into it. Oh, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown here. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm just wondering if you believe God has raised up America for special divine purposes, that we are a unique city set on a hill, or that's what we're intended to be, that God caused this land to be discovered by Europeans and then sent God-fearing people over here to help found our nation, etc. Yeah, we've had a checkered history. Yes, we've done many things wrong. Yes, to this day, you could debate whether we are more of a force for good or for evil in the world. On the one hand, we do a lot of good. Our military has helped save many lives in the midst of war, which has also taken lives. We do a lot of humanitarian good. On the other hand, we export trash around the world. We are a world leader in exporting pornography and materialism and other values that are destructive and negative. But is there a specific divine purpose? Let me tell you where I believe we often make a mistake, and I want to read a few more of your comments that you've sent in. Here's where I believe we make a big, big mistake as evangelicals. I've said this for many, many years. We make a mistake. I haven't answered my question yet, and I asked a sub-question, do you believe America is specifically spoken of in biblical prophecy? But let me respond to a larger issue. We make a big mistake when we confuse patriotism with the kingdom of God. We make a big mistake when we confuse patriotism with the kingdom of God. That God has a heart for the entire world. God has a heart to touch the Muslim world. God has a heart to touch the Buddhist world, the Hindu world, the Western world, the materialistic world, the impoverished world. God has a heart to touch the entire world. And his kingdom purposes are not tied to individual patriotism per se. In other words, just as I don't believe that the reason one team wins the World Cup and another team loses the World Cup in soccer is because one nation is particularly righteous and another not righteous, and therefore God is honoring the righteous, okay? And any more than I believe that the New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl because New Orleans was a specially godly city. Now, they're always, God's working in the midst of this, and he can raise up a godly player on a team, and he uses this as a platform to share the gospel. I understand that. But it would be foolish to think that when Italy won the World Cup, there were certain divine purposes for Italy, but then it changed over to who won the World Cup? Yeah, soccer is not my first sport. Who won the World Cup this year? Was it Spain? I don't know. All of you who are listening that are soccer fanatics, like, this guy doesn't know. Joey, you can't help me. Yeah, wasn't it Spain that won? I think so. Anyway. It would be silly to think, well, you know, God was with Spain. No, well, now he's with Italy. No, before he was with France. No, that would obviously be silly to think like that. The same way to think that God is with America, you know, God bless America, is the heart and soul of everything, as if he's not wanting to bless the other nations, as if he's not wanting to bless the rest of the world. That's an error. And my prayer, yeah, I want God to bless America. Absolutely want God to bless America, not curse America, for sure. But my greater prayer is your kingdom come to America, meaning change us so we can be world changers, meaning impact us so we can go and impact our world. But here's what often happens. We see unrighteousness in the government. And I want to urge you once again, those of you that are sensitive to this issue because of the election of our first black president, please, please do not make these elections an issue of race. Because I can assure you, people were colorblind when they were upset with the economy, and people were colorblind when they were upset with decisions Congress was making in healthcare and so on, because they were, in terms of voter approval, they were more upset with Congress and with white leaders in Congress than they were with Mr. Obama himself. This is not a race issue. But many were concerned about the direction our country was taking. Many felt that Republicans held to biblical values more in terms of, say, abortion and homosexual issues and other things like that, okay? And they vote, and now more Republicans are in power. First thing, people tend to take their foot off the gas. It's like, oh, we don't have to pray as fervently now. Oh, we don't have to cry out to God so much. Why? Why? Because we have more Republicans in Congress? Are you kidding me? That's a reason to pray less? Come on, we tend to cry out more when there's a Bill Clinton in office and we're grieved over his moral stances and other things like that than we pray when there's a George Bush in office because he was more evangelical. Big mistake. Big, big, big mistake. We need to keep our foot on the pedal and pray for the president and pray for the Congress as much as, if not more, than before. Rather than think, oh, okay, because now we have people in that maybe share more of our views, we can coast a little. Big mistake. Back with more. Hey, good news. The debate with Rabbi Shmuley is going to be available for online viewing any minute. So when the show is over, wait 5 more minutes and then go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and watch the online video. Also, can I encourage you to stand with us? I've got a major trip to Israel coming up, preaching at a key congregation, meeting with leaders, doing specialized training for several days with other leaders, doing an outreach lecture at Hebrew University. They found a rabbi, some believers found a rabbi that was willing to debate me and then counsel with other rabbis and backed out. So at this point, I'll be doing an outreach lecture at Hebrew University, which should be videotaped and then put on YouTube, and then other meetings with key leaders in the nation, etc. So it's going to be a very important meeting, but we could really use your help and support at this time. And then my annual trip to India. Randy, remind me to read an email report from India tomorrow. Some of the folks we work with a very serious prayer update a few days ago that's heavy on the heart when you hear it. My annual trip there would be my 17th trip over to India with folks who are living, well, sacrificially, even within India, to take the gospel to people who've never heard it. So if you watch the debate, you're blessed by it. It's very easy to click on support to stand with us and help us. And if you just go to our website, askdrbrown.org, click on support. If you'd like to become a monthly partner, which would be awesome, or help us with a one-time gift as we get towards the end of the year, my deep appreciation to you. So what of this question about America being in Bible prophecy or America having a specific divine purpose? I do not believe that America is specifically mentioned in the Bible in any passage. I don't believe that it's a code word for America in certain prophecies, or that the best interpretation of those prophecies is that it refers to America. I personally don't see that. I'm not convinced of anything I have seen in that way. What about a special divine purpose? Well, it's clear that we've been unique in world history. It's clear that the influence we've had when we came on the scene, some of the unique principles on which America has operated, certain freedoms that we have in the midst of all of our abuses and sins in history, which I've often categorized and which remain to this day, different ones, we have had a unique role. And in that sense, I can easily see God raising us up for a specific divine purpose. In other words, there are godly foundations at the root of our nation. There are things in our history that point to divine interventions. So I have no problem seeing that because of our influence and because of our impact. But I want to read to you something posted by Keith Collins on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. Keith is the director of our School of Ministry. And by the way, we haven't done this for some years, but we are receiving students in January. So there's still time to apply. Go to askdrbrown.org, click on Fire School of Ministry. But as my bottom line, let me read to you what Keith Collins posted on our Facebook page. I believe that there has been an unusual level of God's blessing on America over the last 2 centuries, which in part has been because of our missionary and revival history, as well as our support of Israel. However, we must look in the mirror and deal with the fact that we have murdered scores of babies, as well as deal with our history and the way in which we have treated certain ethnic groups. Also, our embracing of postmodernism among our universities is sobering, to say the least. The fact is that with all of our greatness and incredible history, we must pray for a spiritual awakening that restores the fear of God within our nation and not assume upon God's grace any longer. Amen, Keith. Put another way, to whom much is given, much is required. How about we think about that? To the extent God has raised us up, to the extent God has chosen us, to the extent God has gifted us, to the extent God has enabled us to be a world influence, to whom much is given, much is required. That causes me to tremble inside when I think of what God is requiring of our nation. It causes me to get on my knees and cry out for mercy. But it causes me to have hope. The best could be yet to come. Don't forget, askdrbrown.org. The Shmuley debate will be available for viewing any minute.